Now, let us begin and spend at least a couple of minutes talking about the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 114E. And let's see, I just want to spend a couple of minutes and then segue into the part, which is probably okay. So we're considering the basic science of triangles. It's just the foundation of the science of triangles. DK says, look, what we really need here is the contemplation of the science of triangles. We realize that contemplation is related to the third stage of the meditative process and considers the identity of subject and object. Remember, the triangles are always in back of the squares. They are substanding the squares or are in a higher position than the squares. So we are dealing with triangles in our local cosmos system, and we have to enter into a state when we can contact the spiritual energies and identify with them, which is contemplation, in order even to understand this. For contemplation, that is what it necessarily should be, if understanding is to be the real reward of our efforts. The relation of the three basic energies affecting our solar system and the predominant effect of one of them in any cyclic expression in time and space must always be borne in mind. And I think as I go on here, this being simply the introduction to this little section, we will be dealing with triangles in revolution, and any one of the points of the triangle can be predominant in a particular cyclic phase. When the cyclic phase refers to the third aspect, it's usually the least potent of the three points of the triangle, which is predominant. When the cyclic phase has to do with the unfolding of consciousness, it will be the corresponding point in the triangle representing the second aspect, which will be predominant. And finally, when the will unfolds, the predominating point in the triangle will be that one which is associated with the will aspect. Suffice it to say that we can only be introduced to the basic science of triangles, and that's quite enough on our plate. Even all the triangles which could be formed cannot be considered by us. It's far too vast, but a few of the ones that really affect man, because that's what we're dealing with in this section, is the way the cosmic energies filter down through various levels, zodiacal, planetary, and our own planet, and then down into the microcosm, and not necessarily to leave our sun out of that descent either. Our solar logos, though DK does not put our solar logos in that position. Well, I'm trusting my colleague Brett will interpolate this, and if it sounds like there's a real non sequitur here, it's because there is. And so now we will simply go on to the section of Esoteric Astrology 114E that I was talking about before, and hopefully this has been covered to a reasonable extent. Technology, you know, it can really throw us, especially when Mercury is retrograde. And I say, what else can Mercury retrograde do in this particular period? Anyway, now I'm segueing into what I said before in 114E. And he says, I had well nigh said in the contemplation of the basic science of triangles, for that is what it necessarily should be, if understanding is to be the real reward of our efforts, it should be contemplation, the third phase of meditation in which the subject and object are united. The relation of the three basic energies affecting our solar system and the predominant effect of one of them in any cyclic expression in time and space must always be borne in mind. So there probably was a time in our solar system, probably in the previous solar system particularly, when the Pleiades with the third aspect were predominant point in that great triangle. Now it is Sirius, because we have a a second major solar system, a fifth otherwise, but both numbers correlating with Sirius, a second major solar system, which is to develop soul expression in our solar logos and to take him through at least initiation 4 and possibly initiation 5. The Great Bear will be, I would say, very prominent in the triangle in the latter part of this solar system and in the next solar system, which is the sixth. Okay, one illustration of this normally emerges in our minds if it be remembered that in this world cycle, in our systemic manifestation, it is the second or consciousness aspect, that of the second logos, which is dominant. Hence, if Sirius is the distributor of the second ray in a very deep sense, which it seems to be in that sixfold, 18-fold chart, then it is Sirius, which is the predominant influence in our solar system. Right. So it is the second or consciousness aspect, that of the second logos, which is dominant. The dominant conditioning factor which sets the note for evolutionary development and which engrosses the attention of the evolving human units who are to come to a higher level of evolution than could the human units in the previous solar system, among which the solar angels were numbered. So the level that they could reach in the previous solar system as man was not as high as the level which can be reached in this solar system by the present man working under the second aspect and working under a dominating Sirian influence. But we have to be careful because somewhere we're told that in the last solar system, Sirius was even more prominent than in this one. Well, it has a very strong monastic content, Sirius does. And the Pleiades has a very strong Buddhic content on a high level. So the Buddhic nature of the Pleiades, accepting a Buddhi from the dragon, which is a constellation which seems to have even more emanative Buddhi, could be active in the second solar system. So we really have to know in which system the Sirian system is more prominent, because now and what type of energy is carrying? Is it, it doesn't seem to be carrying so much the monastic energy now as the love wisdom energy according to these tabulations, but we have seen how Venus, which is the reflection of Sirius, carries monastic energy before it begins to fulfill other functions before it lives according to his higher rays. And could that be the case with Sirius? I mean, could the fifth ray of Sirius have been quite strong in the previous solar system and its sixth and second ray be strong in this one? In any case, the evolving human unit is to become more than a selfishly integrated intelligent personality, and this can more easily do in this particular solar system. So, this is the case even when other factors are present and active. So it is the second logos, the second person of the logoic trinity, and the soul of our solar logos, and the main secondary Sirian energy, which is determining in this particular solar system, in this world cycle, in our systemic manifestation. And sometimes a world cycle can be as vast as the duration of a solar system itself. We have to really watch out for this word world cycle, because it's a blinding mechanism and it can mean many different spans, all the way from relatively short, having to do with the Platonic year, all the way to the duration of a planet or a solar system. This world cycle in our systemic manifestation is the second or consciousness aspect, that of the second logos, the sun, S-O-N, which is the dominant conditioning factor which sets the note for evolutionary development, that note perhaps being G, maybe literally a note, the blue and the G, and which engrosses the attention of the evolving human units who have to transcend strictly the personality phase. This is the case even when other factors are present and active. Therefore, all approaches to truth and to knowledge must, in this cycle, be in consciousness and not just in outer formal achievement. Consciousness is so subtle, nothing seems to change in the outer world, yet everything changes in the perception of the outer world. So our progress is in the realm of consciousness, and that has to do with the second aspect of divinity. In another cycle, such an approach may be focused in the will. And that, you know, so maybe a world period, let's see, maybe a world cycle, in this case, is actually the duration of a solar system. Because it is precisely in the next cycle, the next solar systemic cycle, that the will be the objective. And as I said, I think our solar logos will then at that time have a first-ray personality. He won't change his soul ray at second, then he can't change his monadic ray under normal circumstances. So this is the case even when other factors, that is, other rays and other aspects of divinity, are present and active. The third aspect of divinity is the primordial ray for our solar system, and it is present and active. But the attention is engrossed by the evolution of consciousness. Therefore, all approaches to truth and to knowledge in this solar system, in this cycle, must be in consciousness. In another cycle, such an approach may be focused in the will, or even in some already present but unrealized divine attribute, because we are told that in our usual divine attributes, we have not seen, we have not included all possible divine attributes. Now, attribute or aspect, you kind of wonder if we are dealing, the attributes are usually four, the aspects are three, and maybe seven are somehow to be unfolded. Or even in some already present but unrealized divine attribute, D.K. hints at this when he talks about presented attributes in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. He talks about the Buddha presenting wisdom and the Christ love and Plato, the synthesis of ideas. And he talks about attributes of which we may have no notion at all. In that particular case, he's calling love an attribute, which means that attribute doesn't necessarily mean associated with the lower four rays, because love is always associated with the second ray, and so is wisdom. And the synthesis of ideas, well, maybe with the third aspect, even though Plato was a second-ray soul, I think, could have had a third-ray monad. Simply a speculation, but there's much about him. Of course, Aristotle, for sure, was even stronger on the third ray. So, in another cycle, such an approach to truth or to consciousness may be focused in the will, or even in some already present but unrealized divine attribute, and this is more or less from the rain cloud of unknowable things. We don't really know or cannot imagine what he may be talking about, but there are potentially other attributes than those that we have identified to this point, for which we have as yet no name. All that any man can consequently bring to the comprehension of life experience, or to the understanding of such an occult science as the science of triangles, is a consciousness which is developed to a certain definite and personal point of perception and awareness. Well, if we are to contemplate, we must be fairly advanced in meditation, because contemplation involves the merging of subject and object, or so getting into your object that it is no longer an object but is perceived as a subject as well, and so contemplation is pretty well part of the third degree program. This point of perception to be brought to the study of the science of triangles is itself dependent upon individual unfoldment and also upon the state of awareness of humanity as a whole. I suppose it's the individual unfoldment is somewhat supported if humanity has a greater awareness. This connotes two different, though interrelated, conditions of perception. Well, what does humanity perceive? What does the individual conceive? They are interrelated. They are conditions of perception, and presumably advanced individuals are somewhat ahead of what humanity as a whole can perceive. Well, I think he's telling us how abstruse is the science of triangles, and contemplation is necessary to fathom it to any degree. Contemplation is necessary to fathom the science of triangles to any significant extent. Okay. Let's see where we are here. Right. Speaking technically, perception and response, or the activity of the perceiving, observing consciousness carried on through the medium of the mechanism of response, is dependent on the condition or aliveness of the centers or their quiescence. So in an undeveloped man whose centers are less developed, less alive, less vibrant, the registration of what may be possible to register is lower. And perception, the degree of perception, the acuity of it, the sensitivity of it, and the response of the mechanism will depend upon the rapidity of vibration of the chakras concerned, their degree of rotation, I suppose, occultly their speed of rotation. So if we are dull and inert and not much stimulated in our chakra system, perception will be of a lower nature, and less will be perceived. This is true of a man galvanized into activity through his seven centers. It is true of the planetary logos. It is true, let's see here, it is true of a solar logos functioning through still greater centers of vibratory reaction, or still greater lives functioning through an aggregate of solar systems. I think what we need to see here is a treatise on cosmic fire page. We've been reestablished. That's good. For a moment, there was a loss of connection. Okay, so we go here to a treatise on cosmic fire, and we go to document. Okay, and right. We go here to page 293, and we'll see the different types of beings to whom this statement about the aliveness of the centers applies. 293, and there we have, you know, the heavenly man, the solar logos, the cosmic logos, who has as his chakras aggregates of solar systems, alive or not too alive, depending on the degree of evolution, and even the unknown, which in this case I think is the one about whom not may be said, of the second order. The seven constellations are his centers, and to what degree are they alive? Because they could be perhaps more alive than they presently are. So this is true of a man galvanized into activity through his seven centers. The perception will be based upon the aliveness of the centers. Let's just put it that way. Perception and response will be based upon the aliveness of the centers. So it's true of the man, of the planetary logos, of the solar logos, and of the, what can we call it here? The cosmic logos, yes, and probably true indeed of the one about whom naught may be said. Upon this activity and its understanding depends the whole science of astrology, meaning that there is much to perceive and much to receive, but what degree of aliveness is there in the perceiving and receiving mechanism? So the undeveloped man cannot receive the vibrations and or perceive them of the esoteric and hierarchical rulers except in the most faint way. What is real for him is the energy which is coming from the exoteric ruler. Later, when there is more development of the chakras in such a perceiver, there will be more reception. This is a pretty clear statement. In this statement, I give you a clue which may someday revolutionize the present approach to astrology. And I think it will have to do, cultivation of more sensitive perceivers and seeing what they perceive. Sensitive. Because we might be able to take three Aries people, let's say, using that as the first sign, at three different stages of evolution, and we might see what each of them can register of the rulers associated with that sign, and the level of registration. We may even be able to determine which chakras are particularly open and alive, and then analyze what is the registration of a particular energy, and see that the lower type will only register a small span of that energy, and with increasing aliveness in the centers and in the type of human being involved, there will be a registration of a greater span associated, a greater span of energies associated with that particular sign or constellation. So he gives us hints, and these hints are to be developed in time when the time is right. The 12 signs of the zodiac fall into two groups of signs, and their related synthesis has much to do with the signs of triangles. This is interesting because, as I've said, the human being, well, there are different qualities of human beings, of course. There are different levels of evolution of the planetary logos. And why should there not be different levels of evolution of the solar logoi and of the constellational logoi, such as the zodiacal lords? Let's see if their evolutionary status has anything to do with what is being stated here. There are seven signs related to the unfoldment of planetary consciousness upon the Earth, and only incidentally involving the fourth creative hierarchy, the human hierarchy. Planetary consciousness, the consciousness of our solar logos, or a number of different kingdoms. In other words, they're not directly related to the fourth creative hierarchy, the human hierarchy of monads. Now we're talking about man as if he were the monad. Five signs related to the unfoldment of time and space of the human hierarchy. And these five signs are of major conditioning importance and may be enumerated as follows. Now, does this have anything to do with the stage of development of the lords of the constellations of these seven and five? Usually when there are seven and five, usually, seven are considered sacred and five are considered non-sacred. That's as found among the 12. It is certainly so in a well-demonstrated way in terms of the planets. They are much discussed. The sacred planets, Vulcan, Jupiter, Saturn, Mercury, Venus, Neptune, Uranus, and the non-sacred planets, the Sun, Pluto, Mars, Earth, Moon. I list them in that order because that may be the order which has to do with the particular vehicles that are concerning these non-sacred planets, beginning from the powerfully integrated personality all the way down to the dense physical form. So these five signs are of major conditioning importance and may be enumerated as follows. Well, the sign first of individualization, in which the first incarnation was taken by all, Cancer, Leo, Scorpio, Capricorn, Pisces. They are not necessarily in order. Individualization, self-consciousness, struggle between soul and personality, triumph of the soul, and release of the soul. Pisces, release of the soul, Capricorn, triumph of the soul, Scorpio, struggle between soul and personality, Leo, the integration of the selfish personality, at least among many, and Cancer, the beginning, the mass consciousness in which many human beings live for a long time before they become an integrated human being. So that means that Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Virgo, Libra, Sagittarius, Aquarius have more to do with the unfoldment of planetary consciousness, maybe a larger type of consciousness, or the consciousness of the planetary logos. But of course, you know, it's difficult to discriminate between these two groups and say one is sacred and one is non-sacred, because when I look at the five, I can see in Capricorn a pretty sacred constellation. Probably Scorpio is quite magnificent in that respect too, and so is Leo. And with Pisces, we have a very important constellation having to do with the second ray as a cosmic decanate. So it is not easy to look at the 7 and 5 and discriminate them according to constellational status of two groups. But anyhow, I think we see the initiatory program. Interestingly enough, there is non-initiation in Cancer. It has everything to do with just getting it all together and finally becoming an integrated being after experiencing mass consciousness. Leo, first initiation, Scorpio, second, Capricorn, third. At least archetypally, they are thus associated. And Pisces, often the fourth initiation, where one appears to lose all, and even the fifth, where one comes into alignment, some of them, with the higher program of will, or Shambhala Pluto, Pluto being the hierarchical ruler. So these five signs are related in the planetary sense to the five great races, of which our present race, the Aryan, is the fifth. Very interesting. And so, you know, Cancer will be related to the Adamic root race. Possibly, well, maybe they're not in order. That we have to check. But if they were in order, Leo would be related to the Hyperborean. Maybe they're not in order. Well, I'll just put them as if they were in order. Scorpio to the Lemurian. Capricorn, of all things, to the Atlantean. And we have here Pisces to the Aryan. Maybe not. But let's see what he says. We don't know so much about the Adamic root race and the Hyperborean race. HBB tells us something about the forms that were used in those root races and their method of reproduction, which was not through the division of the sexes, but through some kind of budding process, and there was a hermaphroditism there as well. So But anyway, these five signs are related in a planetary sense to the five great races, of which our present Aryan race is the fifth. These five races, under the influence of the five signs, produce the externalizations which are called the five continents: Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia, and America. Probably these are not in order. I'm remembering where he says, he says America was the center of the old Atlantean continent, and Europe seems very much Aryan to me, and Australia quite Lemurian. Africa could also be considered that, but this leaves Africa and Asia possibly connected with the previous two root races. But from another perspective, all the root races were appearing everywhere, wherever there was a landmass, and Australia was definitely part of the Lemurian landmass, and as much, even the remnant people of the seventh subrace of the third root race, the Aboriginal people there, are connected with Lemuria. America may have much to do with the sixth root race, but it also was Atlantean in its expression. And Europe today very much upholding the five sub five. This does leave Africa and Asia, but of course these earlier root races, Adamic and Hypocorean, were said to occur in the far north, none of which here is really represented. So we have some really intensive correlative work to do. These five continents are, through the planetary life, what five major endocrine glands are to the human being. He didn't say the five major, he said five major, and generally we have the pineal, the pituitary, the thyroid, the thymus, the pancreas, the gonads and ovaries, and then the adrenals. And in that I have descended from the top to the bottom, from the area of the head to the base of the spine, even though there's a crisscross going on there between the adrenal, between the glands associated with the base of the spine and the glands associated with the sacral center. And that crisscross probably is connected with the crossing of the zodiacal rulerships of certain creative hierarchies, namely the fifth creative and the sixth creative hierarchy. Possibly. At least there's a crossing going on there, because the signs are out of order, and in a sense Capricorn should rule the sixth creative hierarchy and not the fifth, and Sagittarius should rule the fifth and not the sixth of the manifested creative hierarchies. So these five continents are to the planetary life what five major endocrine glands are to the human being. They are related to five centers. I recall some of us esoteric astrologers back in the days of the International Academy, IAEA, International Academy of Esoteric Astrology, were looking at these aspects of the book, these parts of the book, and wondering if we could make any final sense of it. We are invited to correlate, but it doesn't seem that the correlations are all that easy to confirm. All these appearances, a continent is an appearance, it's kind of like a dense endocrine gland. The five continents are to the planetary life, but the five endocrine glands are to the human being. And so we're going to have some kind of etheric counterpart. We will have an etheric counterpart to the continents. The continents are external. And what is the etheric part? Is there some chakra system or chakric center? associated with each of these continents, because the pineal gland is associated with the head center, right? And the pituitary gland with the adrenal center, and the thyroid with the throat center, right? And the thymus with the heart center, and the pancreas with the solar plexus, and the gonads, ovaries with the sacral center, and the adrenals with the base of the spine center. So there's always a chakra associated, and it's going to be in subtler matter. It's as if the continent was produced by an etheric prototype, which has a particular place in the human being. Well, we notice that there are only five continents at the, well, are there five? We have to, Antarctica has oftentimes been included as a continent, and South America too. But when he says America here, does he only mean America and Canada, or does he mean the Americas? Anyway, certainly South America's day has not yet come, and it is promised much for the coming sixth root race. But what about Antarctica, the Antipodes? It seems to be so remote, but with the great global shifts occurring as we, as has been indicated, even such a place as Antarctica may come to some kind of fruition. I'm recalling that there is to be a continent emerging from the Pacific Ocean called by some Pacifica. And of course, the Atlantean continent is not mentioned here, and there are probably different parts to it that correspond to the lesser continents or countries. We don't know, I mean, there are some descriptions of the ancient Atlantean continent. I suppose maybe they're psychically derived, and maps are given, in which case the entire Atlantean period would be ruled by one particular energy, but its continents would be a subdivision of that energy. And would there only be then four continents for Atlantis, and three for Lemuria, and finally two for Hyperborea, and one for the Adamic races, the polar races? Is that possible? All these appearances, expressions of qualities, and material evidence of life, there's precipitations, you know, as just continents are like glandular precipitations of some greater etheric form. All these appearances, expressions of qualities, and material evidences are the symbols or outer and visible signs of inner and spiritual realities or life, or of life, whatever you may mean by the term, because he tells us that life cannot be understood. What life really is cannot be understood by us, he seems to be saying. But sometimes life means the very essence of things, and sometimes it means all energies within the field of expression that we are accustomed to. But there is some sort of qualified life expression of an etheric nature probably lying behind each continent, and as the ethers carry much higher energies, each continent will be an expression of those energies. For our purposes, we could define life as the energy emanating from certain great lives who stand behind our solar system as its life and source, much as the monad stands behind the appearance of man upon the physical plane, or the soul upon its own level. So this is a definition of life, and we won't let it escape without, I'm playing the game Lose the Cursor, without reading it again. I do want to underline it, however. Okay. So, life as, we can define it as the energy emanating from certain great lives. Of course, if there are greater lives that emanate life, then they have to receive the life from something other. So we haven't really, in any universal sense, defined what life is, but maybe for more practical purposes, as a type of energy, which is emanating from certain great lives who stand behind our solar system as its life and source. A cosmic logos, the one about whom not may be said, is found in 293, possibly, much as the monad stands behind the appearance of man upon the physical plane, or of the soul upon its own level. So our solar system is, as a man, as the monad is to the appearance of man, X is to our solar system. And that could be, of course, you know, it's within the cosmic logos, our local cosmic logos, our solar system is as a heart chakra. What is it to the one about whom not may be said? Is it simply a kind of a heart chakra division within a solar plexus chakra? That is also possible. All these answers do exist and can be intuitively apprehended if we are in the right state of intuitive mind, but we have not to block the true reception. Man, it might be stated, is the expression of seven principles and of the life expression or activity of five planes, two of which are superhuman and three of which are more human. The lower three, with Atma and Buddhi being superhuman. And when a master focuses in Atma, he is still a man, though a Chohan is not. So on the five planes, the being characteristic of the fifth plane and the fifth initiation is still a man. But the being who expresses primarily through the sixth or second, i.e. the monadic plane, is not yet, is not any longer considered to be a man. In this 7 plus 5 is to be found the clue of the mystery of the 7 and 5 zodiacal constellations. Well, so much depends on, I mean, we've isolated the 7, and he's given us the 5, and thus we were able to isolate the 7, but we don't know whether the 7 and 5 division necessarily is based upon upon zodiacal status, the spiritual status of the zodiacal lords. This 7 and 5 vision is not necessarily based upon the spiritual status of the zodiacal lords. All right. Within this sum total of active qualified energies, we have working out today influences and impulses from three major constellations. Within the great aggregate, as far as our purposes are concerned, and what influences us the most and in the most profound way, we have the three major constellations. And remember how these pour out, Great Bear, Aries, Pluto, Sirius, Leo, Jupiter, and Pleiades, Cancer, Venus. These pour through certain other related constellations and planets into the three major planetary centers, Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity. In other words, these heavenly impulses from the major constellations, other zodiacal constellations and planets, pour through certain constellations related to them, the three great ones, through certain constellations related to them, into the three major planetary centers. And this we've seen when we considered the triangle, which is Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces. And they made their way even into the human energy system. It is with these three centers, and I've already shown us pictures of the way They were related previously by Eros in the early days, how it is in the present time and how it will be in the future. We do not have a complete relationship here yet between Shambhala, the hierarchy, and humanity. It is with these three centers I would seek to deal, and to them and their interrelations continually make reference, emphasizing for us what we can grasp and not making us lose our time in following up interesting pathways which, in terms of what can be done with that information, leading nowhere. It is with these three centers I would seek to deal, and to them and with their interrelations continually make reference. Okay. I would ask you to bear in mind that these energies are transmitted from one point to another. What is a point in this case, after all? It's the center of such a being. It's not a true metaphysical point, but, you know, we let that pass because even though we have the concept of a point, what is it really in reality? These energies are transmitted from one point to another or passed through with transmuting effect from one center to another, thus bearing their own vibratory quality, but carrying also that of the center of transmission. So there's a leapfrogging here, or there's a piggybacking, let's say, where one energy tends to ride upon another and be transmitted by a carrier energy. In the transit of energy from a major center to a human being, and when the energy is finally grounded in the disciple's center, you will notice that it is a fusion of six energies. Well, before we get into exactly what Master DK says, we do have to note, the constellational energy, zodiacal energy, planetary energy, the center of a planet, the centers of a planet, the higher center in the human being, and the lower center in the human being. Okay. These three groups of energy, eat energies. Now, we are actually going back, you know, to that threefold, sixfold, 18-fold chart. Okay, let's see. This should be planet, PT. Energy, zodiacal, planetary, planetary, centers of the planet, and so forth. These three groups of energy, each of them a fusion of the six, make the dominating energies controlling the human being to number 18. Well, this fits so well with the 18 fires of rule 4 in rays and initiation, and with the 18 lower systemic subplanes, which we can count out on any map of the planes. And this holds the clue to the mark of the beast, I suppose, beast, which is 666. 3 into 18 is 6. So we connect the beast with the lower centers, particularly base of spine, I suppose sacral center, and solar plexus, although the sacral center is not mentioned in the sixfold, 18-fold chart. Rather, the throat center is mentioned. It normally would be for Capricorn and for Mercury and for humanity and so forth. It would be normally the throat center and the sacral center. The others come in pairs, the base of the spine and the top of the head and the solar plexus and the heart. But in this case, the throat and ajna are listed, and we can understand how they relate to Mercury and to the Pleiades as a kind of throat center, and the throat center and the solar throat center and the sacral center are not listed. So this is the number 666 of the active intelligent man, and distinguishes his form nature from his spiritual nature, which is 999. When you look at this, you know, the look at the six. So the circle is earthed in form. When we look at the nine, and I'm doing it a little backwards, so it looks like a six or a nine to you, the circle has risen. The higher circle and the lower circle, the circle in a sense being the symbol of consciousness, it is earthed in form in the six, and it has risen out of form in the nine. 999, the spiritual nature of man, and indicating in a way the nine initiations and completion. Interesting that the new advanced esoteric school has 24 students and 3 teachers or guides, and the total number is 27, the 3 nines. So the 999 rising to 27 takes us all the way in terms of planes just to the first of the Buddhic subplanes. Otherwise it would be 28, and the 666 takes us through the three lower vehicles, the subplanes of the three lower vehicles. Now it's interesting that the higher two subplanes of the Buddhic plane and of the Atmic plane cannot even be accessed or do not demonstrate by or do not demonstrate a master. They demonstrate Chohans, those who are beyond the stage of master. Anyway, nine is the number of initiation, and each one of these lower vehicles has to undergo the initiatory experience. At first it's the etheric physical, then the astral, then the mental. And I suppose in a way transforming the six into a nine in each case. These three lines of streams of energy in man may be listed as follows. And I think again, one needs here a little bit of work, which I'll do to line up the columns properly. We have three streams of energy as follows, and I think we might do better. I've tried to get these all together in this particular document, but we might be better in turning to the book itself. Will, love, wisdom, and purpose. And notice in this particular case, we don't have Sirius and Pisces placed off in the far right-hand corner. In this case, they are listed in order. In the previous case, they were not listed in order. I wonder if I go up here, if I can see these. Yeah, here it is. The Great Bear and the Pleiades is considered second. And the order places Sirius on the far right and the Pleiades in the center. But now, in this particular arrangement, and I suppose nothing happens by accident, there's the 1-2-3 lineup. Well, this is somewhat of a repetition of what we've gone over, but maybe some new revelations will come. We have the Great Bear is a cosmic source, it's said, although you kind of wonder why the constellation Leo wouldn't be cosmic if it's all part of the one about whom not may be said. And a cosmic being anyway, the solar locus is considered to be a cosmic being, and even at times so is the planetary locus. But we'll just go with the enumeration. Spirit, consciousness, and form. Active intelligence related to the form, love, wisdom, to consciousness, and will, purpose, to the spirit, although spirit is something different than will, purpose. Spirit is like the fourth or central point, with the will being its expression. Then Leo is related to the Great Bear, as we have discussed. It has a particular connection to, as a matter of fact, if you, interestingly, in terms of contiguity, if you take the Great Bear, especially the Dipper part of it, and go just below the cup, you will find, or follow the cup down or up, depending on its orientation, follow the cup, you will find the constellation Leo. There it is. Pisces in the zodiacal position, and Capricorn, we've discussed that. Saturn, Uranus, and Mercury. Three planets that have so much to do with manifestation, really. Saturn ruling the entire cosmic physical plane. Uranus ruling the cosmic ethers. Saturn, in a way, ruling the dense aspect of the cosmic physical plane. And Mercury as a sub-ruler of the cosmic ethers under Uranus. Then they anchor in Shambhala on the Earth, which is the planetary head center. Here DK is expanding the model a little bit. Hierarchy is where the love wisdom anchors. It's the planetary heart center, and humanity is the planetary, sometimes planetary ajna center, sometimes planetary throat center, and occasionally certain types of human beings connected with the planetary solar plexus, though often it's the animal kingdom that is assigned that. Now we just continue with the chart going downward. Will, purpose, love, wisdom, active intelligence. Let's see if it says that. Yes, it's the same. And we have some triplicities, spirit, consciousness, form. Okay. Then the head center of man, the initiate. He is an initiate in this first line. The heart center, he's the disciple. The initiates are ruled by the head, and the heart in the head, and the disciples by the heart center, though it does have a Buddhic connection. So we are in the ego now, and the higher ego, in a way, is the spiritual triad, but we can consider it also in relation to the egoic lotus. So the disciple, egoic love, and the form is connected with the ajna center. Interesting that the throat is not utilized here. So often the ajna center is left out as a sort of seventh center, but here it's very much front and center. And the ajna center is connected with spiritual mind, the abstract mind as a whole. So if we're talking about the ego being the spiritual triad, we have spiritual purpose, which is atma, spiritual love, which is buddhi, or you know, egoic love, egoic purpose, and then spiritual mind, which is higher manas. All of them somehow embodied and encapsulated in the egoic lotus. So at least, you know, we're talking about the head center of man, but they are connected with these higher sources. The head center with egoic purpose and with the atmic plane. He clearly says the head center and the atmic plane. The heart center clearly connected with the Buddhic plane. And of course with the love petals, just as the sacrifice petals are connected with the head center. And then the knowledge petals will be connected to an extent with both the ajna center and the throat center, I would think. The aspirant is here seeking the vision. It is a little bit of a mystery to me why he includes the ajna center in the throat rather than the throat and the sacral, unless the sacral center is not really considered as a real center, but as a kind of evocation which is expendable. The base of the spine center is related to will, always, whereas the head center is purpose. So once again, we see that repeated. Purpose for the head center and the base of the spine for will, but here it's the personal will, and I suppose it is more, it's not really developed until the fifth initiation, but to the extent that it can support the personal will, it is somewhat developed. Solar plexus, personal desire, and the disciple is here again, because the disciple has not rid himself of personal desire, and the aspirant again, with personal creativity through the throat, and pro-creativity through the sacral center. So the big mystery here, you know, is why should Uranus be connected in relationship to Pisces, even though if you really study the glyph of Uranus and the glyph of Pisces, they have a lot of similarities in terms of the two half-moons, as it were. And why should the ajna and throat be mentioned and not the throat and the sacral center? Those are the questions which will come up. But DK is really enlarging upon this chart now, and he is demonstrating expanded relationships here. I could have, I suppose, written all of this in. I tried to clean up the chart just a little bit and succeeded to a degree, but let's just say, what is the point? What is the point here? The point is that the great energies are being anchored in microcosmic man and his centers and even the lower centers. Now, if you look at these lower centers, we have base of the spine, solar plexus, and throat, and it's really interesting that for the human line, the Capricorn line here, the Mercury line, we don't descend all the way to the sacral center. We have a higher center than either one of the second aspect or first aspect line. First aspect goes all the way to the base of the spine, solar plexus a little higher, and throat center still higher. So it's almost as if the Blessed One, you know, the first ray flies like an arrow into matter. He destroys or ruptures the way by which he might return. He grounds himself deeply in the depths of form. And then he wishes to return, of course. And that is Vulcan going down to the depths of form. Well, okay, I think we have reached a point. What I'd like to do here is say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 1114E, page 428. We certainly are getting the triangles here, aren't we? We're finding all kinds of triangles, some of which we are familiar with and some maybe not, or the way they're being presented, less so. That's how you make things disappear. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 115A. I think I will not go on. That's a big enough program, and we don't want anything to happen in the conversion. So what I'd like to do now, just to close, is to sound the great invocation after these five programs, and then we'll come back. We'll come back and we'll maybe take one last look at this very powerful tabulation, which shows how all the way from the super constellations to the lower centers of man, which are related to his personal life, personal will, personal desire, personal creativity, the high energies ground themselves. Give, says the Tibetan, the promise of fulfillment, the hope of fulfillment and success. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we'll go on later if it is possible. Done five of these so far today. I'd love to have days when I could do seven or eight. You know, there's so much to explore together. I've already done, as I say, a large portion of Cosmic Fire, but mostly written to a certain extent. I wish I had done it in this manner, but then that would probably go on forever. So there's certain things from esoteric psychology I'd like to take up, and a lot of things from the old commentary, and also the egoic lotus and physiognomy. I'd like to take that up in a way that could show the pictures here, and the solar fire rituals. I'd like to get them completed in ritual form so they can be used by people in the future, in part or in whole. I have aspirations to finish quite a few things. But anyway, we will go on to 115A, and thank you for getting this far, if you have. If you hear what I'm saying, you've gotten this far. Okay, we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.